Oh, is this recording? Okay. So, actually, this is very good. This is really relevant to the question of, like cheskas kashrus, like, can you rely on the people claiming that they have X number of students, that they really have X number of students? Right? So, like, do they have a cheskas kashrus until proven otherwise? So, right, I guess, like, the whole bikkurit system is saying, well, not necessarily. Can't necessarily trust you. So it's like a good question, like how much can you be someich on people and assume that they're okay? So when we're talking about Hamotzi Mechavel, that was one option in our general discussion of like how can we base this on actual like legal principles. One option was to say, look, we don't actually know who it belongs to. We know where it is. And from a legal perspective or from a practical perspective, the rule goes that we leave the money wherever it currently is. That doesn't necessarily mean that we believe that it belongs there, right? It just means that we leave it where it is so far, right? That is the idea of hamotzi mechavelo, olav haraya, and otherwise we leave things as they are. It's some sort of status quo, right? One thing that we saw in Rabbi Chanan was that in order to have a status quo, right, it needs to have some sort of legal basis. And you have to have some sort of sense to the status quo before we can say this is the status quo. We'll leave it. So, for example, we wouldn't say hamotzi mechavelo haraya if the person holding on to it doesn't really have a claim to it. It happens to be in his hands, but we have no reason to believe that he has any ownership rights to it whatsoever, right? That's not going to create hamotzi mechavelo haraya. For example, if you're in a store and the store clerk is holding one of the, a piece of clothing on a hang on one of the store hangers, we don't say, oh, he has possession of it, right? And therefore, until we prove that he doesn't own it, we'll say hamotzi mechavelo haraya, because there's no indication that he has ownership, right? There's no reason to say that he has possession, and the status quo is that it's in his possession because he's holding onto it, he's moving it around inside the store, but that's not possession. Right? When we say possession is 9/10 of the law, it does not that it happens to be near you or in your hands. It means that you have possession of it right now. Right? Now we have to define that idea a little sharper, but it's this idea that possession isn't just the same thing as it being in your hand. Okay? Yes, you're.
I wanted to clarify. Last time we were saying this with Rabbi Kahn, he doesn't think there's Dror deDimona of the Shtei Uchsin,
Exactly.
even though they're both gonna like. I'm saying I feel like you can make the case that there possibly is,
You could.
because,
Well,
but he's not.
right. I think you could say, well, I would say you don't really. It depends how you define Dror deMamona. But assuming Dror deMamona means that in the eyes of Beis Din, right, we see you as having some sort of reasonable claim to this object that antedates and precedes your claims in court, then he does not. What does that mean? Right? If you see two people fighting over a random object in the middle of the street, you have no reason to believe in advance that, oh, I think this talus might belong to Bob. Now that Bob and Jim are like punching each other out and holding onto it and doing tug of war, right? So we might award it to one of them or the other. But there's no reason in particular for us to say that, oh, Bob has a legal claim to this object, right? Before we saw them fighting over it. In the case of the two shutvim who have a house that fell down, right? We have no reason to believe that the bricks that happened to be in my chatzer belong to me any more than to my co-owner. But we do know that I have ownership rights to some of these bricks, right? I have possession because I am known to have a connection to this. To this object, to this property, right? There are legal grounds for my claim that I own it, and the reality is such that I have possession. Now, what that basically says is, if you have a legal claim and you have possession, then possession is 9/10 of the law because you have claim to it and you're the one who has it. So we won't move it unless we have proof otherwise. That's different than saying, that's not going to be true, if there's no legal claim that connects me to this object, right? Let's say you have a store clerk who's holding an object that belongs to the store, right? And for some reason, there's, I don't know, for some reason, he claims that he's not being paid. He hasn't been paid and he, you know, deserves this object, right? I can say, oh, well, Hamotzi Mechira of Haraya, because he has it in his hand, but he has no legal claim to it. We don't, possession is 9/10 of the law only when there's some sort of doubt of the ownership of the object, and this person has legal claim to it, and because he has legal claim and possession, so possession is 9/10 of the law. Right? That's only within the playing field of there actually of him being someone who has a claim, right? Dvar domon. So we'll say the status quo maintains only if there's some sort of status quo in place, if there's some sort of reasonable claim that the status quo would enforce. If it's just a random guy off the street claiming something, and we have no basis for his claim other than, I don't know, he grabbed onto it. So we saw him grab, two people grab onto this talus, okay? They're grabbing onto the talus. We have no reason to connect this talus back to them before they came playing tug of war. So we're not going to say, oh, well, the status quo, you know, is gonna say that we should leave it where it is because there's no status quo, right? Status quo isn't just like, oh, we just ignore everything, we walk away. Right? Status quo says that there's a status quo. There's some sort of status which is in place. In order for there to be a status, there needs to be like some sort of a legal basis to it. Okay? All right. The other thing Rabbi Chanan was arguing was that there's a separate concept that says if someone has possession of an object, we presume that it really belongs to him. Now, why? That is a totally different case. That says if this guy is holding on to this talus, right, and claiming that it's his, then we have two options. Either he's a thief or it really is his. Now, in order to assume that he's a thief, we would have to go against his cheskas kashrus, right? His presumption of innocence. And since we presume that people are innocent / decent people until proven otherwise, we can presume that the object belongs to him and that he is not a thief. Right? That is a separate form. That's not saying that the status quo maintains. Here there's no status quo because there's two random people who are arguing over a talus. What there is a presumption of innocence, which leads us to assume that the person is not a thief, and therefore, mashatachas yado shalom. Okay? So Rabbi Chanan says, Steinbox and Batalis is not a case of Hamotz Mechavel of Haraya, because neither of them has Jorah de Mamona, neither of them has a real claim to the object. However, since both of them are holding on to it, and we don't want to assume that either one is a thief, we say, since we don't assume that people are ganavim, how did it come into his hands? We don't assume that people are thieves. This isn't that, oh, he has possession and the status quo maintains, because there is no status quo on a legal sense. Right? What? But rather, we know that it's his, because otherwise we have to assume he's a thief. We don't want to assume he's a thief because he has a cheskes kashrus. So mamela, we assume that it's his. Can we get that? Great. Okay. So now, we have a question of maintaining the legal status quo or the possession status quo that assumes that there's someone who has possession with a legal claim that created a status quo. And separately, which is not applicable to Steinmochsen because neither of them have a legal claim. Separately, we don't want to assume that people are thieves, and therefore we assume that what they have in their possession is theirs and not stolen, right? When would that not be true? So Rochana gives one example, which was, let's say it's an object that's normally borrowed, right? Or let's say you have a clerk in a store. The clerk in the store, the reason why he's holding the store's merchandise is because he's a clerk who works in the store, right? There's no reason, like his possession, his having it in his hands doesn't lead us to the question of either it's his or he stole it. It's either it's his, or he stole it, or he's simply doing his job as a clerk in the store, right? So him having it doesn't create an anan sadi, the maditachas yadur shalel, right? And he has no drar d'malona. So a clerk in the store holding on to it would give us him neither the status quo, nor, right, create the presumption of ownership. Okay. We pointed out that according that maybe the same thing would be true if it's not possible for it to actually be both of theirs. Right? We have two, once we have two people who are holding on to it, both claiming that it's theirs, and there's a Vaday Ramai, right, or EF Shalios MS, then we can't maintain the position that both of them are not thieves and therefore it belongs to both of them, because that's impossible. So then this Chazaka Ma D'Tachas Yado Shalow falls apart. Because all based on the assumption that neither of them is a thief. But if one of them is definitely a thief, so then, right, then that doesn't lead us, give us any useful information, because one of them is a thief, we know it. Right? We try to avoid assuming people are thieves because they have a cheskes kashrus, they have a presumption of innocence. That only works if it's actually possible for there not to be a thief. Right? And that's why, with Rashi and Tosfos, Rashi says, if there's an avadei ramai, someone's definitely lying, right? And both of them say, oh, I wove it. Or Tosfos says that it's impossible for it, the chalukah to be true, right? It definitely only belongs to one of them. We would not do chalukah, right? Now, that's true, dafka, because what we're trying to do here is assume that it really belongs to him. And that assumption cannot be true, then we can't assume it. Okay. The Shar Mishpat gives a different explanation of how the Chazaka Ma D'Tachas Yado Shelo works, that the assumption of ownership works, and it would potentially lead to a slightly different conclusion. Right? The Shar Mishpat says, Ube emes yosinir, the tama chazaka d'cho ma d'tachas yad adam hu shelo, hu mitayma d'kanimsa kan haya. It's also a chazak, right? This object is here, so it's presumed to have always been here. We don't assume that, right, the things were different 5 minutes ago. Right? It's like a general assumption in life, in halacha, that an object, right, in motion remains in motion until something else stops it. And an object that is not in motion requires an impulse in order to put it into motion. It's true in physics. It's possibly true in law as well, right? Unless we have reason, unless we see something change, we assume, right, that the status, what is true now, has been the reality going back, unless we have other information. Right? Now that's an information thing. One second, Michal, and I'll answer your question. That's an information thing again, right? That's like a chazaka, like an assumption that we make about the world. But it's not about the people, but it's about the object, right? We're assuming that the status quo, not the legal status quo, right, but the physical status quo remains true, okay? So it's not like, since the object is here, right, we're going to, in this person's possession, we'll maintain that even though we have no idea about who owns it. It's saying because this guy has it, we assume that it's been here for forever. It's always been his. Okay, what would a nafkamina be between these two? According to the Kovach Yurim, the emphasis is on the person. According to the Shar Mishpat, the emphasis is on the object. Okay? And a potential nafkamina between them, two nafkaminas potentially, is what type of impossibility of Iafshar would impact this, right? According to the Kovach Yurim, where it's about the kashrus of the Gavra, our natural inclination would be to say that if it's Vaday Ika Ramai, if one of them is definitely lying, then we would not do Chalukah, like Rashi says. Like both of them say that they wove it, which is impossible, then we would not do Chalukah because we know one of them's a liar. Right? So that would lead us to maybe not accept the idea that the achzuke inchi began vilo machzukin, because we know he's lying, right? While according to the Shar Mishpat, it's not really about the person, it's about the object. We see the object in this guy's possession. We assume, we retroject that it's always been here. So then the only issue would be if it's EF Shar Leos Chalukah MS, if it's impossible for the division between the two of them to be true, because then we can't assume that the object was half in this person's possession and half in that person's possession if that's just not possible. Right? We have two people holding onto the talis. So if we assume, if the chalukah is EF Shalios MS for whatever reason, it's not possible that they both own it. So then we get each one is holding onto half the talis. So what we want to say is, oh, the person who's holding on to half the talis A always owned it. Part A, because he has it, so let's assume he always had it. And the person with B has B, so let's assume he always had it also. If that's impossible, so then there's no longer a chazaka ma detach the other shalom, right? Because the object couldn't possibly be kanim zakan haya, right? It is here, and therefore it was always here, because it can't be that it was always in possession of A and B, if it's EF Shara Chaluka Leos Amos. But let's say it's Vaday Ramai, that doesn't necessarily bother us so much, right? Okay, one of them might be lying. That doesn't change the fact that the object is in his hands. And since he has possession slash control over the object now, let's assume he always had control over it. Okay. One of them is saying lies doesn't really change the fact that the object is presumed to always have been here or there. Right, we're half here, half there. If that's impossible, so then it's impossible. So in terms of whether or not you can say chazaka ma tachas yadu shalo, it would depend on the possibility of the objects being owned, less about the kashrus of the people. Get that? Right, it's the same type of presumption, but not about the people, but about the object. Rachel, do you have a question, or did I answer it?
I was just going to ask about the Shar Mishpat in terms of how he would see something like a legal claim on the object. Because, yeah, I don't know. He's just not taking into account at all. So it's just interesting.
One more time, say it again. What's the question?
Oh, is he doesn't seem to be, I don't know if it's more of a comment or a question, that he's not taking like Safik Jarara de Ramona, not Safik, just Jarara de Ramona, into account at all, because like a legal, yeah.
I hear that. Again, if you accept the Kovet Shirim's Chakira, Dror Mamona is necessary for a Hamotzi Mechaber Al Haraya, but not for Chazaka Ma D'Tachas Yad Oshala. Right? Because Chazaka Ma D'Tachas Yad Oshala says, because we see it in his hands, let's say we'll assume that it's his. Hamotzi Mechal of Olav Haraya says, because this guy has possession, that possession is significant. Right? Kovet Shirim says, but possession is only significant if you actually have possession, capital P. Right? You have legal possession that's legally recognized. And in order for your possession to be legally relevant as possession and not simply, proximity, it means that you have to have some sort of legal claim to it. It doesn't have to mean that you have the only legal claim to it. Your legal claim could be equally good as somebody else's, right? But the only way that we're going to say that you have possession is if you actually have possession. Just an example is if we, Ishmael, great example. In football, if you throw a football to somebody, right, they touch it with their hands and then it falls and then they get tackled, right, or they get knocked out of bounds. They got knocked out of bounds, let's say that way, okay? So he touches it with his hands and he gets knocked right out of bounds. What's the deal? Do we say that he has possession or not? So the answer is, it depends if he had control of the ball sufficiently to make a football action. That's the official rule. What that means is that if you get the ball and then you get squished right away, right? You have to actually have the ball in order for us to say that you have a chaloshe in possession, in order for us to say that it was a catch and not that you did not make a catch, right? You just got smashed into oblivion and you dropped the ball out of bounds. The defining feature about whether or not you caught the ball and then fumbled it, let's say, or you just didn't catch the ball, is did you have possession of it? Touching it with your hands isn't possession, right? It could be in between your hands. You could actually like have it in between your hands like this for like half a second. That doesn't mean that you have the ball, right? In order to have possession, you need to actually have possession of the ball. You need to be able to do something with it, right? So the same thing is true here. It's not good enough that it happens to be in between your hands. You have to have possession. You now have to like have some sort of real control over it. And that control on a legal level requires you to have a legal claim to it. If you have a ball and like a bunch of people are just like knocking into each other and grabbing it, right? You see people playing a game of football. And they're all, right? They're all grabbing on, you know, there's a ball and then someone grabs it from another guy and then someone grabs it from the other guy. You don't say, oh, whoever has the ball is like Hamotz Mechavel of Haraya. In terms of like ownership, right?
So are you, the Shaar Mishpat presupposes that they both have legal claims?
No, the Shaar Mishpat is talking about their other case, not about Hamotz Mechavel of Haraya, which is about saying that possession is 9/10 of the law. He's trying to say that, talking about Chazaka Mantetachas Yadar Shalau, that we assume that what you have in your hands is yours, right? That is true only when, that's true when we say, oh, kanemta kanhaya. Since it's here, the chazaka is that it's always been here.
Okay, I think I follow.
Right, it's about figuring out who owns it, not about saying what to do with it. Right, let me just make this in different words. Hamotzi says, what do we do when we don't know what to do? And the answer is, we leave it where it is, as long, right? Because possession is 9/10 of the law. That possession needs to be, right, legal possession. Meaning the person who's holding on to it also needs to have a legal claim to it. Separately, there's a question of not what do we do with it, but who owns it? Right? Hamotzi Mechavel, right, if we're following this chakira, isn't saying that the guy owns it. It's just saying that what do we do with it? And the answer is leave it be. Right? Or leave it with whoever has possession. Possession requires possession. It needs to have a legal claim. It has to have a legal basis. Separately, we're not asking what to do. We're asking who owns it. Right? Rabbi Chanan says sometimes we can assume whoever has possession, whoever has it, owns it. Why? Because otherwise you have to assume he's a thief. The Shaar Mishpat saying we can assume that whoever has it owns it, because since he has it now, we can project backwards that he always had it. And if he always had it, that means he owns it. Right? One is saying we're assuming the guy's not a thief, therefore he must own it. The other one's saying, it's here, let's assume that it's always been here. Okay, but it's about the object and who owns it. Not about what do we do with objects that we don't know who owns it. Okay? The Kovet Shirim offers another idea, which is that really, we actually have no idea who owns it. Rather what? Nir Mizeh. Dehach chazaka, kol ma shetachas yad adam hu shalom, eino mitam umdina ubeur shekenu, ela shedavar Torah hu she'in tzrichin lacho shema eino shalom. Okay? V'dugma lezeh ke'in din chazaka b'yisurim. De'eino mivareras ha'maaseh mikol makom hu din vaday. In Yisurim, we have this idea of chazak, right? of chazaka that it's kosher, or chazaka that it's aser, and that in order to, you have to prove that the chazaka has changed. The chazaka's heter, right? So chazaka's heter, it's mutter until proven otherwise. Why aren't we always choshesh? So the idea is that by Yisurim, the Torah tells us that you can follow its presumptive status. That doesn't mean that we know that it's kosher. It means, right, that we treat it as if we know it's kosher. Okay? V'hochanami b'chazaka zu le'inyan mamon. Af shehamaisa ina mivurer aslanu. Even though we actually really don't know who owns it, however, we treat it as if we definitely know that the person who has possession, who has it, owns it. Okay? Why? Because otherwise society couldn't function. Okay? The world would basically fall apart if we didn't do this. And therefore, we have to. Right? We have to assume that people own what they have in their hands. Otherwise, you just couldn't function. In America, I think in everywhere, really, but I just remember this as like a cool thing, is that whoever has possession of, let's say, a dollar bill owns it, okay, and can use it, and it's legal tender, regardless of whether or not it was stolen. Right? Here's the following question. A dollar bill is really just representative value. Right? So in theory, if you rob a bank, what we should do is we should just passel the dollar bills that were stolen. And then no money was actually stolen. And they would just print new dollar bills for the bank, right? We don't do that. Why not? So the doctrine is that if we did that, then people wouldn't be able to trust that the money that they're getting is actually has value, which would destroy the currency. So what we do is we treat the currency as if it has value. Okay. Now, really, these are money is supposed to be representative of value that has been contributed, or resources that are been contributed to the economy. In which case, if you were to steal money, so those aren't your resources. So it's not really, it really shouldn't work, right? But we treat it as if dollar bills actually have the value that they represent. Because otherwise, the currency wouldn't work. So same thing is true about objects, right? If we didn't let people buy and sell objects and treat them as if they are owned by whoever has them, then you would never be able to buy or sell an object, right? Because you always have to worry that maybe it's stolen, right? And then you didn't buy it, and then it's not yours. So until it's been proven, so it's not just that, you can, maybe not. Right? Don't assume. The answer is no. Assume that you treat it as if it's owned by the person who has it. Because otherwise you just couldn't function. Right? The society couldn't function. So Torah tells you not just that, is it that even though you don't know that he owns it, you treat it as if he owns it. Okay? Yeah. Right? It's not an umdana. It's not a way of evaluating what the truth is. It's a way of dealing with reality. Now what's cool is that now both parts of Hamotzi Mechavero and Chazak Kamai Detachas Yadu Sholav, neither of them is now about figuring out who owns it, right? One says, what do we do with the money? We leave it where it is. The other says, who do we treat as the owner? Whoever has it. But we don't actually know who owns it anymore, according to this idea being brought up in the Kovach Shirim in Baba Basra, is that we just really don't know, right? The Kovach Shirim initial assumption is we do know the guy has a cheskes kasher, so we know he didn't steal it, unless proven otherwise, right? Here he's saying we have no idea who owns it, none whatsoever, no idea, but we'll treat it as if whoever has it owns it. And separately, we have a rule that if there's a status quo, if someone has actual legal possession, then we leave it in that person's possession, even though we don't know who it belongs to. Right? Those are two things. There's still two things, though. One is saying that we treat it as if the guy owns it. The other says that we keep it where it is if someone has possession. Okay. The Chasam Sofer says, Chazak amad biyad adam hu shelo, lo yadati lamakom v'shum svara. Ad rabba, bab kam amar shas, da motu mechavrov, araya, svara hu. Man dekayv leka keva, azil lebeisa, asya. Person who, right, who has a toothache, should go and go to the doctor. Mivur she'enenu chazaka shehu shelo, ela ein shum adam yachal lo hotziu miyado, ela biraya bura. V'haklal, ani azayti chazakas mamon, eno chazaka klal. Rak sfiko atzum kokach ache ina in adam yacholot imenu bli raya bli rak. Says the Chasam Sofer, do you know what the basis of chazak ina mash tachiz yado shelo is? None. It just doesn't exist. There's no such rule. There's only one rule, which is hamotze mechavel al faraya. Okay. Now this is right. He gets rid of chazaka mash tachiz yado shelo, and he breaks down the duality that he rejects, the duality that the coveture suggested. And he says, no, there's only one rule, which is possession is 9/10 of the rule, of the law. But you don't need Zharad Mamona in order to say Hamos Mechbel Faraya. What we do is we say, possession is 10/10 of the law. Possession is really the most important thing in the law. And it's not simply that, oh, if someone has possession and there's a status quo, so that, but there's like, based on a legal claim, then we'll say, oh, you know, the status quo maintains unless there's proof. He's saying, always, whoever has it keeps it, right? In order to take something away from somebody else, you need absolute, you need proof. You need clear proof. And until you bring that proof, the person can continue doing whatever he wants with it, right? Okay, wait a second, but we don't know that he owns it at all, right? Which is the problem. I mean, here's our problem. Let's rephrase this again. There's kind of this baseline question, which is, let's say Bezdin can't take it away from him. We don't take it away from him, right? But we have no idea if it belongs to him. So how can we treat it as if it belongs to him and that he gets to do whatever he wants with it if we have no idea if it's his? Right? That's a good question. We have no idea if it belongs to him. So, okay, we're not going to take it away in Bezdin. Bezdin's not going to take it away from him. But how could he go and sell it and buy things with it, et cetera, if we have no idea if it really belongs to him? Right? So I think it's a really good question. Like, the guy doesn't... So fine, we won't take it out of his hands without proof. But we're not going to... We shouldn't treat it as if it's his. Right? So... The solution of the Kovitz Shurim was what? That either there's a chazaka that it actually is his, or in the case of a Motzei Mechavero, where you're right, we don't know if it's his, but we're just saying that the status quo remains, we need there to be a drar d'mona. He needs to have a legal claim to it that predates our whole suffix here, and then he has a legal claim, and he has possession, so the drar d'mona legal claim. Plus his possession, right, allows him to keep it and for us to treat him as the owner, right? Because he has a legal claim and he has possession. So Dror Mamona is 1/10 of the law and possession is 9/10 of the law. So together, right, he gets to act as the owner, right? Option number two of the Kovitz Shurim was... The Torah just kind of gives you like this special dispensation to assume, to treat people as the owner because otherwise these things wouldn't work. Right? So we're allowed to treat it as if we knew he was the owner, even though we have no idea. That was his like second solution. Okay? The Chasam Sofer says, no, that's not true. We have no idea who owns this. And we don't even have an assumption that he owns it or a special halachic chazaka that says even though we have no idea, we treat it as if we have an idea because the rule is we treat these things as if we knew even though we have no idea. No. We have literally no idea who owns it. What's the answer? How does it work though? What do we do? And the answer is in dine mamonis, when it comes to money, So possession is in 9/10 of the law. How many tenths of the law is possession, according to the Chasam Sofer?
It sounds like a whole big chunk of it.
Yes, but how many tenths? 10 tenths, exactly. It's 10 tenths of the law. The Chasam Sofer said we have no idea who owns it, and you know what? I don't even need to come up with like a fancy schmancy special, oh, God said, lo shafkes chai l'chol b'riyav, right? Society would collapse and it would return to chaos if we didn't do this. So we have a special right to, right? It's like a din vadai that even though we have no idea, we should treat it that way, right? In umetam umetina, davar Torah in sarach lachosh. Like there's a special like rule that you get to treat it that way even though you have no idea. Says the Chasam Sofer, no, right? In right, mivuar, inenu chazaka shu shalal, ela in shum adam yachala hutsiyo miyado, ela b'raya b'ra, right? Chazaka z'mama inu chazaka klal, rak sfeiko atzum kol kach, ad she in adam yachala hutsiyo miyado, b'li raya b'ra. The suffix mamon, the way mamon works, is that possession is 10 tenths of the law, right? The suffix mamon is so big or so awesome. They're like, okay, unless you can prove that it's not his, possession is 10 tenths of the law, and you're going up against possession is, you know, just it's irrelevant unless you could prove absolutely, because once you have possession, you have total ownership rights, right? That's all that matters, essentially, says the Chasam Sofer, right? Because suffix mamon is suffix atzum kol kach. Because in Mamonis, possession is just 10 tenths of the law. What matters is you have possession. And by the way, it's like a legal concept. It's fascinating. Because by Dini Mamonis, on many things, possession is considered almost like an independent metric as opposed to ownership. Now, there's a question of certain things. Do you really own them if you don't have them in your possession? So let's say Rabbi Yochanan says you can't be makdish things that are yours, but you don't have control over right now because in order to like really do monetary things, you need to own it and you need to possess it. Okay? And in Aveda, right, it's something that you at some point becomes not yours. Not because you don't have legal rights to it, but because once you lose possession and you lose all possibility of regaining possession, okay, let's say it's lost and you have yish, or it's lost like bezuto shalyam, like it's like washed away into sea, once you have totally lost possession, it's just not yours anymore, right? I think the Chasam Sofer is saying like possession is really just the key part of ownership. What does it mean to own something? It means to have it and be able to use it, right? That's kind of what ownership is, right? Then you get into like these very weird questions of like, you know, if you have DRM stuff enabled, so like you have the music, you can use it, but you're not really allowed, but you're really only renting it from the record company. But at the end of the day, it's, you have rights to it and it's yours and it's your object, but you're not allowed to like copy it, but it's yours forever. So like, do you own it? Do you not own it? And at some point it's like, well, you just own it or software or things like that, which is also kind of why a lot of companies move to software as a service as opposed to actually selling you the software. Cause then like if you bought the license to it and you have the software, it's like, isn't it really yours? Not theirs anymore. Anyway, it gets very conceptually complicated, but that's essentially it, right? If someone else owns it, but I have total use of it and I have total possession of it, so it's really basically mine. There's another nafgamina of that, which is, do you know about the problem with electrical appliances? So a lot of electrical appliances, in theory, you should have to tow them. Now the problem is that if you tow your electrical appliances, it'll probably break them, right? So what do? So some people have like hold that you really like don't need a Tovel electrical appliances because they get plugged in or because of the way they're made or because since it would destroy them, then it's there's like no mitzvah to tovel them because it would, right? It's mitzvah saseh, but you can't do the mitzvah saseh. In case you can't do the mitzvah saseh, there's no problem with bitul saseh. A lot of people just say, oh, just sell it to a guy, and then it's not chayiv in tefillah, right? What's the problem? If you sell it to a guy, but you have possession, the guy is never going to take it back, and he couldn't take it back if he wanted to, and he has no legal claim or no legal way of doing that. So who really owns it? Right? Kind of you. And so some people think that that just wouldn't work, because at some point, if you have absolute possession, then you own it, and then it's yours. So here, Chazal is saying, like, we don't have no idea who owns it, but when it comes to mamonos, that doesn't matter, because possession is a 9/10 of the law, possession is 10/10 of the law. Yeah, Tali.
Okay, so for, like, selling chametz, I know that there is a legal way for them to come get it, but, like, wouldn't you kind of say the same thing? Like, it's literally sitting in your house where it's been sitting the rest of the year, and now you're just, like, pretending like they have ownership, but, like, you have full possession still.
So, actually, so part of why we make you, right, list the places where the chametz is, and you have to, like, lock it up, you have to, like, you know, put it somewhere separate, is dafka, to put it in the possession of the guy, and you actually rent him those area, those places. But number two is that you actually aren't allowed to use it while on chametz, on Pesach. You're not allowed to touch it. It's not yours, and you're not allowed to use it at all either, right? And you also can't use it until after Pesach, until you will buy it back. So it's actually not in your possession right now, right? You're not allowed to use it. You can't use it. You're not even holding on to it, technically. So that would work. Again, there are people who don't like it for that reason. It's just no one thinks it doesn't work, technically. Because you did a legal sale, and legally they could come and take it, and you're not allowed to use it until you buy it back. So it does work. But that is why some people are uncomfortable with it. But what's the problem with, like, the Yitzhak Yerkumkum is, who uses it? You, not the guy, right? You use it every day. If the guy were to walk into your house and try to take your chametz, you wouldn't let him. If the guy came in and tried to take your chametz, you'd be very surprised, right? But you'd have to let him. And you would. And you'd make him pay for it, right? But at the end of the day, it's like, okay, you know? So you got to do it. So, but the kumkum, like, no one has a havamina. So, you know, some of these things, they, like, you could sell it online, even. Some people do that. And then it's like, who are you selling it to, right? Like, what? Like, some, like, you know, so many, I think, has, like, a website. So I have to look. Maybe they have, like, a guy who, like, every once in a while comes around and, like, keeps track of where the kumkum is. Like, let's say you sold it to the guy, right? Do you have, like, I don't know how they do their website. But in order for this to even be remotely, like a good harama, you'd have to, like, put down your tzedakah and your address and your phone number, right? And you have to update your address so that if the guy ever wanted his kumku back, he'd have a way to find it, right? Otherwise, it's just ridiculous. Otherwise, it's totally, right, in your thing. So then you could say, like, oh, maybe if you have, like, das not to be kone, and, you know, then you're pulling out, like, way too many thumbs. If that's not to be kone, and you sold to the guy, and you made the guy do hagbah, and, like, you're, like, have kavana for it to be, like, hefker, you know? So it just becomes very, very difficult to defend it. If you really think that, like, at the end of the day, the defining factor in dini mamonos and ownership is possession. Okay, did I make a chart? Oh, I made a chart. Gishmak. Okay, just go over quickly the chart and then we'll finish. All right, so we have two basic ideas. One is that it's a beirur. It tells us what happened. It helps us know reality, who owns it, right? So one idea, I didn't find someone who said it explicitly, but I think I saw someone, like, quoted as saying this. I don't remember who, but then there's rov. Rov chafatzim bidei adam are not stolen. Right. Normally, that's like the majority. Majority of objects are not stolen objects. So you can, like, assume that this is one of the majority that isn't stolen. Okay. Similar to what the Shaar Mishpat says, which is there's like a chazaka of the hefta, that since it's here, we can project backwards and say, oh, well, it's probably always been here, and it really belongs here. While the Kodesh Yerim says it's a beror, it helps us figure out the reality based on the cheskas kashrus of the person. It says, well, we're assuming this guy's not a thief, and therefore it must not be stolen, it must belong to him. Okay? So all those are ways of saying that the guy holding onto the object proves, right, helps us figure out that he actually owns it. The other idea that we saw is actually we have no idea who owns it. None whatsoever. But what? Even though we have no idea, the Torah tells us that since it would make things just unlivable, right? It would destroy society if we had to assume that everyone might not own their objects. So we're allowed to, we have this halachic chazaka that says treat all objects as if they really are owned by the people who have them. Not because we know that they own it, but because that's a chazaka of Dine Mammon, as the Torah sets up, as how you should act. The Torah tells you to act as if you know that the people own it, even though you don't know that they own it. Okay? The Chasam Sofer says, absolutely not. We have no idea who owns it, and we're not even told to act as if we know that they own it. What do we know that they have? We know that they have possession. We don't know if they own it. And what are we going to act like? We're going to act like they have possession. Not that they own it, but you know what? That's all that matters. Because possession is 10/10 of the law. Right? So the Chasam Sofer says, it's not that we pretend that we know he owns it. We have no idea. And we know that we have no idea. And we're going to act like we have no idea of whether or not he owns it. But what we do know is that he has possession. And that's all that really matters. Okay, Shkaf, we're going to stop here. And then we'll do Shtayim. How does this play out in the Shittos on Shtayim Ochsen on next year? Shkaf.